Hi guys, I'm here with James. We're in London at Piclo HQ, and today we're going to talk about all things flexibility and flexibility markets. So James, let's do it. Great to have you on, and thank you for hosting us in your new office.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So first thing I want to start with is, who is James Johnson? How are you here? What's Piclo? Why are we talking?
So I'm the CEO and I'm co-founder of Piclo. We've been running Piclo now since 2013. Prior to then, I was in academia, trying to, believe it or not, design the Internet of Energy, being inspired by, you know, how the Internet's transformed communication and through decentralization, and taking some of those lessons and trying to apply them in the energy world. And yes, it's tough trying to really innovate and transform the energy system. It's a really important, but it's a big challenge, as I'm sure you know as well.
And so how long? Yeah, definitely. So how long has Piclo been going now?
So this, yeah, we're in our ninth year.
Wow, congrats.
Yeah, I like to think of it as a story of two halves. We actually started off our journey going down a different path, and we did classic startup pivot about four or five years ago, which was a really interesting and challenging moment for the company. But so in a way, we feel quite young because we've been focusing on our current problem sets for only the last number of years.
Okay, and Piclo, the company, what's the problem that you solve? Who's the customer, and what's the problem that you solve for them?
Great. So Piclo is an independent flexibility marketplace, which means we have two customer sets. We have the buyers and the sellers of flexibility. So on the buyer side, we have the distribution networks, or the distribution system operators, DSOs. And then on the seller side, we have flexibility providers.
So DSOs like UK Power Networks, Western Power, WPD, those kind of companies, just for the folks who are listening who maybe don't know
exactly.
The jargon, right?
Yeah. Another way of thinking of it is, I like to do analogies with the road network. So you've got the transmission network is the equivalent of the motorways, run by national or owned by National Grid in England. And then you've got the A and B roads, which are the distribution networks where it take the power to the last mile to the home. So we're working with the distribution side of things, and it's very interesting. It's a new application for flexibility. So flexibility, as we know, has been around for a while.
Okay, James, what is flexibility?
Okay, backtrack a second. So flexibility and flexibility is a really interesting concept, because first thing I like to say is it's actually invisible. It's actually filling in the gaps where, you know, for example, to get to a decarbonized energy system, we all know we need a lot more renewables. Renewable energy is intermittent, and flexibility is essentially filling in the gaps when it's not sunny or when it's not windy. That's a key role of flexibility. It's being able to change demand or generation to meet an external requirement. In this case, balancing renewables. An alternative use case, and this is the new use case that we're looking at, is managing congestion on the network. So where there is too much concentration of demand in a specific location, for example, if a whole if an entire street of people install Tesla superchargers and try and charge them at the same time, you're going to create a problem on the network.
Yeah.
So that would be a use case for essentially providing a service, a flexibility service, to the grid operator to manage the grid effectively.
So smart management of traffic jams on the B roads, to use your analogy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. And so you've managed to explain flexibility in a way that we've been trying for months and haven't really been able to figure it out. Neil is nodding, our sound guy. all right. So what's the vision of Piclo? What's the opportunity, and where are you guys aiming at?
I think, what we have sort of carved out is a new business model, that of an independent marketplace, because there are quite well-defined traditional models. There's the aggregator model, there's the DSO model, there's energy suppliers, there's developers, but this sort of independent marketplace model is in flexibility is brand new. So we're cutting new ground with this, and I think the challenge for the last couple of years is really kind of working out what we are as an entity, where, you know, what Where can this go? Where you know, what is the big picture vision for the company? And I think there's a really really exciting journey and for this sort of platform marketplace in the future, not just on the local congestion needs with the distribution grids, but actually supporting all different kinds of flexibility and potentially even wider energy products to be traded. So the vision is basically...
It's big.
It's providing a sort of open, transparent market platform where anyone that has an energy product that needs to be... they need to buy or purchase, procure, they can advertise on the platform, and anyone who has something to provide that service, they can sort of meet that and kind of bid in and win those contracts.
Okay, cool. So I think this... That all makes sense. What I'm going to try and do is tell you what I think Piklo is, and then you're going to tell me it's wrong, right? So my experience of Piklo until now, from when I worked at Kiwi Power, and you guys have come on a... Man, you guys have moved so fast. So kudos for moving fast and building products that look really nice. Like that. Aggregators and asset owners, so people who own generators or have some flexibility or pumps or DSR and that kind of thing, they can register those assets on your website, right? On your platform.
Yeah.
The other side of the customer, the other side of the marketplace, which is the DNOs, they can procure that flexibility from them. Is that right? So they can pay the generator to switch on or the pump to run slower or the DSR to kick in or the air conditioner or whatever's connected. And you guys are the matchmaker in between. Is that right? I almost said Tinder 4.
No.
everyone's a Tinder 4, right?
Don't go down that. Don't go down that route. I'll accept eBay for energy, but let's not go any further down that route. Yes, broadly speaking, that's right. You know, I like to think of it as the first step in the marketplace is visibility, and it's visibility in both sides. So visibility of what flexible assets are out there, that's really important for the DSOs and system operators in general. And on the other side, it's visibility of the need of flexibility, the requirements that the network has, and we provide that sort of bi-directional visibility. The second part is, yes, the matchmaking process, and that's, again, it's part of a regulated procurement process that we're supporting, and you know, as procurement processes go, it has to be open, transparent, fair, and yep, all that sort of stuff. And there's a number of different steps, from qualifying the providers, the companies, but also qualifying the technical solutions. Then the third part is the auctions. So ensuring that the best price is put forward for these contracts. And that's what we've got on offer in the UK market to date. Now, the exciting thing is coming this year is we're actually expanding the product suite quite a lot. The next step if you kind of step back a moment, what we've built so far is a really, really effective procurement tool for DSOs to procure flexibility. The next obvious step for us is moving into the operation space.
Mm.
So helping the DSOs and the flex providers with both availability declarations, so if an asset is no longer able to provide a service, declaring that to the DSO, and dispatch notifications, so providing a streamlined way of receiving instructions to actually operate your asset.
Okay.
And we're not stopping there. We're going even further. So the next thing we're working on and we'll be releasing later this year is our settlement module.
Wow.
So actually plugging into the meter data, using the information on what was dispatched, looking at the performance that was actually delivered by the assets, and generating an invoice on behalf of the flex provider.
Wow. So that fully integrated.
That end-to-end service is really exciting. There's we're going from one third of the offering to the full offering in 1 year.
Awesome. That sounds ambitious. So
yes, it is.
And how are they doing this at the moment? Are they doing it with this, humans doing this with spreadsheets, and then you guys are going to put it in the cloud and do it all automatically?
Yes. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense to bring it onto one platform. You know, for example, you look at the concept of settlement, where ultimately you're creating an invoice. This is really important for providers. How are they going to get paid? In order to calculate that, you need to have access to the contract information. What's the agreed service that you've put forward. You need access.
These like frequency response services, like store services. Do you get paid for availability to just, or do you have to? Let's take it back a step in. What are the services? What does a service mean?
So there's in the UK, the DSOs have defined kind of four standardized services. Now, when you look internationally, they're using slightly different names, but in essence, they're kind of the same concepts. And the way I like to break it down is into sort of how far in advance you are looking for that service, or you're committing that service. So you could be getting a contract, which is sort of an availability contract, availability and utilization, up to 7 years in advance. And what the DSO is getting some sort of certainty that there's going to be an asset there that's going to provide that can provide a service, and essentially is paying quite a lot for them to be available, and then pays them an additional amount once they get dispatched.
Yeah, okay.
And that's kind of like a capacity market type arrangement, but on a local level. And then
it's a long contract. I didn't realize they went that long.
Yeah. And then you've got sort of day ahead or near real time, which can just be sort of utilization only. Oh no, I've got an issue in the network I need to solve. Is anyone able to provide a service?
Okay.
And that's just utilization. So you have quite a range, and then you have post-fault-ish contracts as well, restore, kind of like Black Start, but again on a local level.
Yeah. Okay. And so these, and how do so I'm going to pretend I'm a company who has a backup generator, right? And I don't really use it, and I want to make some money with it. Right, and the local distribution network substation is not overloaded, but so it's constrained. Yeah. And instead of building more transformers, they go, "I'll tell you what, Quentin, we'll pay you to use your generator when we need it, and we won't have to spend money on reinforcing that substation." That's the idea, right? Yeah. So then I get a contract for like 7 years, and the DNO pays me for what? I know there's a service, and there's four types of service. But what do I have to switch on at the same time every day? Do I have to ramp up? How does that work?
Again, there are different types of contract. There are scheduled ones, which are like pre-agreed. Yes, you switch on at this time of the day for this service. Or there's sort of more bespoke ones, which are like you agree to be available for these 2 hours a day, but you don't need to do anything unless we call on you and say, actually, now we need you. Now, what we see quite typically, and this is where the real interesting thing is, the number of utilizations is actually quite low, because the grid is actually quite well designed. So the number of times where a constrained network is actually close to its limits in any given year is very infrequent. Okay. So these are being available and providing that service, being on hand to provide a couple of hours of service a year is so much more cost effective than upgrading the entire network for those few hours a year.
Oh man, this gives so much away though about how overbuilt our network capacity is, yet underutilized most of the time. How much additional copper is there installed that perhaps isn't necessary for 99% of the time? It's an optimization problem, and you guys are solving it, which is incredible. I love the way that Piclo are coming about this is a software and optimization problem, not a put more copper in the ground problem. Yeah. Which is awesome. This is exactly, we should be using these systems smarter, not building more systems.
Yeah. And the subtlety is that we still need to invest in more infrastructure, because you're going to double the energy consumption of the UK over the next couple electrical energy with EV and heat coming onto the grid. But instead of doubling the size of the grid in like 10 years, it's been here for 100 years, we're going to double it in 10 years, that's just not going to happen. You can have a more sensible, in terms of targeted investments, we really need to build more infrastructure, network infrastructure here. But actually, over the 90% of the cases, it's just a flexibility contract for a provider, let's say a storage provider, that is actually stacking up revenues from all the national services as well. And this is just an extra... an extra chunk of revenue they can add onto the stack.
Nice. Can we talk about energy storage for a second? Because at Modo, we're obsessed with energy storage, and it's a key part of the future energy system. New assets like energy storage, new systems like Piclo for optimizing the new energy system, and then people participating in these systems in a different kind of way. So if I'm building battery assets in the UK, should I be getting excited about accessing revenues through Picklow for these assets? And how do I quantify that? How should I think about that?
I think it's a really interesting one, because when you look at distribution constraints, the sweet spot is actually the smaller assets. Okay. Because it just statistically, there's more of them, you're more likely to get in the right location. So actually, residential level assets are perfect if you can have if you can get enough of them.
Yeah.
But you know, low megawatt, single digit megawatt battery systems, are you know, and more numerous of them is a better strategy to even just target the DSO revenue streams. If you've got a very large 10, 20, 30 megawatt kind of group, the chances it's going to be in the right location are lower. So that's the subtlety. But I think that the point is the DSOs are very much trying to think about this as a complementary service to all the other revenue opportunities. So if you happen to be in the right location, or if even you've got a choice to choose between various other locations, just check out where the DSO flex opportunities are, because it's just it's additional revenue, it's additional service. You're going to get a better return on investment.
So if I'm developing a site, or I'm choosing... The funny thing is, right, and we've seen a lot of these at Modo, there's a lot of developed sites out there. And if you're trying to sell a developed site, you may sell potential future benefits that can't really be realized yet. And something that often appears in slide decks and in sales packs is, you know, future flexibility revenues from being connected to a DNO substation, which is constrained, right? But there's no number on it, there's no pound figure, there's nothing like that. People just go, oh, watch out in the future, you know, you'll be able to access Picklow or something like that, and you'll be able to figure it out, and it's in a great location to make money. And we're always a little bit skeptical of this.
Mm.
So can customers log into Picklow, put in their postcode, and see what's available at that substation? Is that something they can do?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So for all the folks who are listening to this and developing sites or interested, so they can go to that site, they can find out where it's connected, and find out information through your service about whether there's future revenue streams on offer right now.
Yes.
That's cool.
Exactly. And one thing that we're going to be bringing on is actually being able to look at the historical contracts as well, because that might give you an indication where there might be opportunities as well in the future. So, yeah. But yeah, you can log in. We've recently released our postcode checker service. So, yeah, that's all available.
Awesome. And what do you think about... how are DNOs thinking about energy storage? Because you know DNOs probably better than everybody. How are they thinking about energy storage, and what are the opportunities for storage in this new world of decentralized, distribution-connected, flexible assets? And not just a bit, small storage too, right?
Yeah.
Storage in general.
I think, obviously, they're thinking, first of all, this is a level playing field. Mm-hmm. So they're not sort of targeting specific technologies. They're sort of open to all technologies. Let the best technology win, both in terms of being able to provide the right service in the right location at the right cost.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is storage is one of the fastest growing areas alongside vehicle charging, mm-hmm. smart vehicle charging. I think that it's one of the exciting areas, and I think from residential up to sort of small, sort of single digit megawatt scale systems, and I think it's probably because the reason why it's quite an exciting area is overuse of the word flexible. But
as long as it's not the word blockchain.
but like I guess the flexibility of, you know, you can have greenfield sites, or you can sort of choose where you're going versus, you know, I think some of the challenges around demand response is you're working with an existing system. So I think there are some inherent benefits about being able to move faster and provide a service to the DSO. But we're seeing a kind of wide variety of different technologies.
I want to talk about numbers for a second. I'm going to put you on the spot because you haven't done any prep for this, so I know, because I didn't give you anything to prep for. So how much money goes through Picklow's service? Now, how much value is being created on Picklow's service? And how many megawatts, I guess you're on gigawatts now, are connected to the system that you have data on and can participate in these services?
Yeah. Well, I did a quick scan just before, just because I knew you were going to catch me out. All right, so some numbers for you. So in terms of contracts awarded on the platform, so we've been live for 3 years. So over the past 3 years, it's been £55 million of contracts, and it's growing rapidly. So last year was, approximately 80% of that volume. Wow. So it's kind of going up and to the right, as they say. So 55 million, that's translated into 670 megawatts of contracts. In terms of the assets which are registered on the platform, it's much higher. So we have 15 gigawatts of assets. Roughly half of these are operational. They exist in the UK system, and the other half are in the various stages of planning or development or connection process. Yeah. And that's quite an interesting distinction, because you don't need to have an existing operational asset to take part in DSO services, especially if it's for a long-term contract. You can take part of a planned asset.
So I guess anyone who's building an asset anywhere in the UK should be registering their asset on Picklo to figure out... Just have a look, and then you will notify them, I imagine, if something comes up for their assets. Is that how it works?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool, right. So it's a no-brainer, right? You're developing an asset, make sure it's on Picklo.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you said £55 million of contracts. So that's a lot of money. And is that how much of that is utilization and how much of availability? I'm really putting you on the spot now.
Oh, I don't know, but I think... a bunch of that is sort of multi-year contracts. Yeah. So it's not, I wouldn't say 55 million is the size of the DSO market per annum. It's probably about a fifth of that.
Yeah.
Over the course of multiple years, because, again, it's kind of like the model is more similar to sort of capacity market contracts where you're sort of signing up a multi-year contract. Now, I think the DSOs are very interested in signing up more operational assets as well, and getting more into the sort of shorter term requirements. And I think that's going to be a real area of focus for this coming year too.
Okay, awesome. And which DSOs? So do you cover all DSOs in the UK, all geographies, or is it just some, or how does it work?
So we're working with three in the UK at the moment. Okay. So that's UK Power Networks, SP Energy Networks, and Electricity North West.
Okay, yeah.
With those three clients, there's a good coverage from, actually we cover England, Scotland and Wales. So, yeah.
Can people register assets in locations that aren't under those three too? Can they still put those assets on your system?
They can. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. One thing that we've got to talk about is the regulatory environment. So, your customers, if you like, one of the customers, you're a matchmaker, right? But one of the customers is a highly regulated, monopolistic company, a lot of them, but monopolistic companies in those particular areas, the DNOs, who are going through this massive change to become much smarter and more, ready for the 21st century, really.
Yep.
How do you find engaging with those kind of customers? Because they're heavily regulated and they've got rules they have to follow. And I'm sure that, kudos for getting three of them to sign up contracts with you, because I imagine the sales cycle is really long and the contracts are really complicated and there's like a bazillion people who have to check them. So what's it like working in the heavily regulated side of the industry? And how do you do business there?
I think, on the surface, it's probably the most regulated part because of the inherent design of the market. But when you look into it with the fact the kind of the real methodology that where the DSOs are, and by the way I interchangeably call them DSOs or DNOs.
Yes.
I know there's a bit more of a formal definition, but I like to think of them as all DSOs, or at least notionally.
I call them DNOs or DSOs? Did I get it wrong?
The plot thickens when you look internationally, because in Europe, they only call them DSOs. They don't have the DNO name.
Okay, right.
So, if you use the European lingo, it's all DSOs, and that's where we're using. But in the UK, they've kind of split it into two, where the DNO is the sort of incumbent business model infrastructure, and the DSO is the smart part that they're transitioning into.
Yes. Okay.
But we just focus on the smart part anyway, so we call them all DSOs, and you look at the way that they're incentivized in their business model, it leaves a lot of room for innovation and basically doing new approaches. And the UK and GB specifically has set this standard worldwide, this what you call this TOTEX model,
okay,
which is not CapEx just CapEx focused, i.e. install more capital networks. But actually, if you find a smarter way of managing the networks through an operational OPEX solution, then you get rewarded and incentivized to do that. And this is a really key niche, but really important tool for networks to be kind of to have the mandate to do these innovative things. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the UK the GB DSOs have had this mandate for a long time, since 2015. Other countries are just catching up now. And what that means is there's actually quite a lot of space for new ways of doing things. So when we developed our marketplace in the first instance with UK Power Networks as our first partner, there was no prescribed way of doing this. We basically went to first principles. We spoke to the users, both from the DSO procurement teams and the flex provider teams. Mm-hmm. And from first principles, we worked out what problems they had and we developed the marketplace from there. So it's actually, you know, compared to, for example, the retail market, which is highly prescriptive, and there isn't actually much room for, in my view, innovation in the retail market.
Yeah, how pretty is your app, basically?
And there's a lot of consumer protections and worries around that, etc. And compared to parts of the DNO value chain, for example, the network charges and etc., which are also very prescriptive, when you look at flexibility, is actually quite wide open about how this is all going to work. So it is there's a little niche here where there's not a huge amount of prescribed rules, and Ofgem is taking quite an enlightened view of going, learning by doing is a really good approach. Let's just make sure that we create an ecosystem and we move things forward. And other countries are starting to look and copy this, which is really exciting.
Yeah, let's talk international now. So you guys, your product's been up for like 3 years, platform's been going 3 years in the UK, and you pretty much signed, you're widely known, the flexibility people for DNOs, right? So now the question is, where do you go internationally? Which countries are you most excited about? What's the plan?
I think the way that we look at our business growth is looking at actually three dimensions of growth. Mm-hmm. The first one I already mentioned around kind of end-to-end system operations and settlement. The second area of growth, which we can come back to, is actually adding on additional markets to the platform, additional types of products to trade. And then the third one is this international expansion. Now, the exciting group of countries that we're looking at is the EU, mm-hmm. Generally, and the reason why this is very interesting is because of EU directive, the clean energy package.
Yep.
Actually, funny enough, specifically puts an obligation on all DSOs in Europe to procure flexibility ahead of reinforcement.
Wow, and that's huge.
And that basically means
to explain what that means. That means that DSOs have to look at operating the system smarter rather than spending the money and putting new transformers in the ground and cables, right?
Yeah.
Have to do that first.
Yeah, so the EU directive comes in and basically that needs to be transferred into national law, legislation, regulations, and then get adopted by DSO. So there's a couple of chain reactions need to go on here before it gets implemented. But what we're seeing is a scramble across all of EU for DSOs and regulators to think about how they're going to do this, setting up pilots. Awesome.
Very excellent lobbying from Piccolo. Very well played.
Yeah. No, I mean, it actually just comes from, everyone's looking at what the UK has done and seeing that it's working here and this is growing. And therefore, they're sort of going, well, let's go down that route. So it's very exciting. There's a whole load of things to come this year. I can't say too much right now, but, watch this space. And then in terms of back in the GB market, we've made quite a lot of progress on our second market that we've been working on, which is the Piccolo Exchange. Mm-hmm. And this is a slightly different model. Instead of a procurement type model where you've got a regulated system operator on one side and a provider, this is actually more of a bilateral exchange between participants. So
it's like the first business. This is like the open energy days. Not open energy, sorry. The open
utility.
Utility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Days. So you've gone back to your roots of peer-to-peer energy trading.
Yeah, more or less.
Love it.
But yes. Yeah, so what the first product that we've looked at is capacity market, because there, you know, secondary trading of capacity market already is already allowed and it's part of the system.
And it's so messy, right? I want to hear about it because having been involved in secondary trading transactions, man, what a mess.
Yeah, and it's basically, you know, so you've got the EMR portal where you qualify, you participate.
These are people who run the capacity market.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and this is where you know if you agree someone to transfer your contract with, you log it in this portal, and there's the incumbent situation is there's no way to discover, find, trade, agree, negotiate with counterparties. So
you call your aggregator, right? And then they know everybody and then they matchmake for you.
So this is why we thought it was a great idea to sort of as our next product, because we already have a load of capacity market participants already signed up. And basically we've been working with funding from Bays and under the Flex Exchange program. Throughout last year we were sort of trialing under beta environments to, you know, try and see if we can actually improve the dynamic. So it's early days in this project. We've signed up 23 capacity market participants. We've had about just under 20 contracts advertised. We've almost had two transactions, but the pricing, the bidding didn't quite line out. So there's some really interesting learnings there. But you know, I think this is a really exciting growth area for Piclo as well.
So how does it work? So if I'm always talking about batteries again. So I own a battery and I've got some spare capacity on my capacity market contract, and I want to trade it with someone so someone else can provide that capacity. And so what I used to do in the old days is call up everyone in my phone book and say, do you know anyone who wants to buy this thing, right? And now instead I go to Piclo on the, what's the product called again?
So it's still under the Piclo Flex, okay. PicloFlex.com, and then you would have to register to be part of the exchange. So, you know, as long as you're, and that, you know, it's free of charge again, you register, you're part of the exchange, and then you go on, you basically fill out the details of the contract that you want to offload, and then you launch it and you wait for some bids to come in.
And people swipe right or swipe left, right?
Something like that.
Oh, okay. I'm really excited for Piclo, this exchange product, just because hopefully it will widen the market and it will provide more transparency, and it should be more efficient as a market, which is good for everybody, you'd think.
Yeah.
Very exciting. And so the future of that product, so you're doing capacity market at the moment. Does this mean that potentially in the future we'd be able to trade, I don't know, a dynamic containment contract and a secondary market by advertising it on Piclo and someone else buying an Ether block, for example? Is that something that might happen in the future?
Yeah. I mean, we're not limiting our vision for this product. The idea being, it's kind of the way to think about this is you've got an exchange. It's actually got three parties to it. You've got the two parties that want to trade, and then you've got essentially the market owner or the market administrator who needs to be notified of a trade, and that's this dynamic. So capacity market, it's the EMR portal managed by National Grid ESO. So this is in the beta version, you'd have to sort of agree to trade on Piclo and then go onto their portal and go through the normal processes. Yeah, yeah. There's clearly some improvements that we can make in that process through an API integration and streamlining it. And that's on our roadmap as well. But then, you know, there's other kind of products. For example, back onto the DSO network, why can't you trade your spare connection capacity? Or if you're seeking additional connection capacity, but there's none available, can you not purchase that from someone that's not using it?
That's cool.
And again, it's that sort of three-way. So you've got the counterparties negotiating the commercial deals, and then you're getting that approved by the DSO, DNO in that area. So that's something we're looking at this year as well.
Anything on grid connections is going to be welcome, right? Because really, when push comes to shove, the thing that's stopping energy storage getting built right now, it's not land, it's not capital, it's not investor appetite, it's connections. Mm-hmm. And there is so much connection capacity out there that's being underused. If we can solve that, I mean, that is a massive, that will accelerate the deployment of energy storage and therefore have a huge impact on our decarbonisation goals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whatever we can do to help you do that, then just saying the door's open at Modo. I'm going to move back in time a little bit now. This is something we've got to talk about because we, at Modo, we went through a big pivot. When we first started the company, we were going to do optimization software and sell it to asset owners, right? And pretty much 9 months in, we threw everything in the bin and started again and became the company we are now.
Mm-hmm.
That pivot was almost a pivotal, which of course it was by nature, but it was crucial. Without it, we probably wouldn't have succeeded or got to where we are now. Success is difficult to define. We've got a lot to do still, but how did you do that? Because lots of companies, lots of people don't get to experience what it feels like emotionally as a start, but operationally as a business to do that. So what did it feel like to do that? How did you make the decision? And where did you start out and where did you end up? Obviously, it's picked up as what it is, but what were you starting off to do? And how did you know that the timing wasn't right or the product wasn't right or the customer wasn't right? Or how did you make that decision?
I mean, broadly, our vision and mission has always been the same. It's about creating a marketplace for decentralized energy. Mm-hmm. And our first approach was because, you know, look at the three founders. I come from academia in the sort of theoretical end of the energy market, and my two other co-founders came from the tech world.
Yep.
We didn't know the first thing about regulations or actual business models, and, you know, some might call us naive. We, you know, from that sort of perspective, from a sort of technological perspective, we developed, again, we had some pretty cool technology that was a sort of peer-to-peer transactive energy platform, and not based on blockchain, by the way.
You'll never be able to raise money if it's not on a blockchain.
but we had a solution we're looking for a problem, and what we basically ended up on, we didn't want to become an energy supplier. It wasn't in our DNA. We're a software marketplace, Therefore, we went down the route of partnering with suppliers. We'd had an innovation project, and we applied our technology. And it was okay. We had some commercial customers. It was being used, but it was, you know, you describe it as sort of vitamins rather than painkillers. We weren't really solving a really important need. It was like providing a bit of transparency to corporates about where their energy was coming from. And I think that's the real challenge, knowing that when to give up on something and to move on. Because versus just keep plugging on, keep going and plodding on in a direction, persistent, you might make it. And sometimes you're never going to make it on that particular path. You go two steps back to go somewhere else. What enabled us to take the different direction was some innovation funding that we could then essentially have these two things living in parallel. That was tough. Because I had my mind on this future product and I was pushing it forward, and the rest of the product team were maintaining this old product, and their day-to-day was kind of not great because they knew this thing was dying, but still we had customers we had to maintain. The tricky thing, as I was saying, was actually surviving a pivot. Knowing whether to pivot, I think it becomes pretty obvious when, you know, you've had your 100th meeting with a VC and they had the same message come back to you that why this is not going to work as an idea. And then you know it's a good idea to pivot. But like pivoting itself is the hard bit, keeping the company together in that process.
Yeah, you need, I mean, the type of people that the bravery and the resilience of the people around you to put up with that whole process and stick at it. It brings you together in a way you can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I'm going to get emotional now. right, just to finish up. So let's talk future energy system. What's your vision of the future energy system? What are we looking at in 10, 20, 30 years? And how is technology going to enable it?
I spend a lot of time thinking 10, 20 years in advance. So this comes easy to me. So okay. I have quite a clear view. And this actually comes back to what I was doing before Piclo Open Utility. Thinking about the Internet of Energy, I think that for me is the right concept of where this when the energy system is going to go is think a bit more literally about creating an Internet of Energy. Now, one way to to describe this is what we're seeing right now is decentralization of energy resources. So the grid edge devices going from a few big power stations to millions of end nodes. But we still have basically one network that's centrally controlled. I think the way to describe this real disruptive change is actually decentralization of network control. That for me, like having, rather than thinking of it as one network, having, you know, a network of networks, i.e. an internet work of connected island, you know, these networks that can operate in island mode and operate connect together. And that for me is the real disruptive change that the sector is going to go through over the sort of 10 to 20 year time frame. Now, energy storage is key to all of this. Energy storage everywhere. Is maybe a nice note to end on. That's my view.
Wicked. Well, you heard it here first. James from Picklow says energy storage everywhere. And it doesn't matter. However you think about it, we're facing decentralization is everywhere. We're getting decentralization of everything outside of energy. And it is going to be really apparent in energy in 10, 20 years. But let's see. James, I won't take any more of your time. I just want to say thank you for coming on. For anybody who's watching or listening to this, please do remember to subscribe, hit like, and make sure you give some feedback. What do you think of the discussion? Let us know in the comments section. And until next time, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.